After a long summer break in which your iPod has been starved of politics, we're back. I'm Tom Clark, and I've got Allegra here with me.
You do, and on Politics Weekly this week, we're joined by our colleagues Julian Glover and Nick Cohen. Nick, we're going to be discussing the Lib Dems in a bit, and 1 week into party conferences, I've already got a cold. But next, we're going to Labour. How well prepared are they? Just now, Baroness Vidura, she resigned, but she's basically got another job. Does it matter?
Well, you know, all the usual cliches apply about rats and sinking ships, but and I have no particular regard for her because she foisted a shockingly complicated and expensive deal on my hometown of London for its underground and its private-public partnership. But it's a sign that, you know, the inner circle is admitting it's all over and they're moving on for other jobs.
But, I mean, let's take this together. I mean, is it silly, Julian, to try and take together the situation with Baroness Vidura walking out the door and then the kind of thread that separates Lady Scotland from the abyss? Is all this coming together in any sort of way for conference, or is it all too bitty?
Wishful.
When you're in trouble, all these things get piled together and it's sort of one bad bit of news adds to another one and suddenly it looks like a crisis. Then people say Gordon Brown's been snubbed in America. Was he snubbed? Wasn't he snubbed? Everybody seems a bit confused. Is his health all right? We have no evidence his health is anything other than very good. But people now keep writing pieces saying he's had to deny it. And as soon as you deny something, you allow people to push a bit further and say, why are you denying it? What's going on?
But isn't it
and it's a little bit unfair, some of this, but it is a consequence of the way he's led the government and the situation the party's in. And he can't avoid it. Is it a good run-up to the conference? Of course not. It's the state he's in is so low that when Charles Clarke yet again says he must resign,
everybody almost in the Evening Standard.
Exclusively in all outlets, everybody almost just yawns and goes, oh gosh, there's only someone calling for the Prime Minister to resign, not
quite
again.
An amusing blog post from Tom Watson of he's actually done a Google search on how many times Charles Clarke has called for Brown to go, and it is in the thousands. At least the Google hits, anyway. But isn't it interesting that it was an NBC journalist that asked Brown about his eyesight, that in America it is almost a right to know how well or not the president is. You have to have it all detailed. And that here there's been pretty nasty speculation for a few weeks now, which for me almost seems like the new tactic to get Brown to realise that possibly he may not have much longer as Prime Minister.
Yes.
But it's Americans that have this kind of black and white view of it, whereas we have this kind of gossipy view of it.
It's true. I mean, certainly to say the speculation is, I don't think it's coming from the opposition in Britain. I don't think there's a smear
They're
campaign.
Not going there.
If it is, it's coming from within inside Labour, and that's really quite sad. Do Americans have a different attitude to health? Yes, they do, and they asked candidates at the last election many more details than we ever do. And we're in that strange position, of course, that we say health is a private matter until it affects your job. But because it's a private matter, we never know whether it affects your job until afterwards. But there isn't any evidence in public of this. People who know Brown haven't come up with things to say.
I'd say the only evidence of it is that when you see those over-the-shoulder shots of his notes on the podium or at the dispatch box in Parliament, his handwriting's enormous.
But I was told by a very effervescent, shall we say, right-wing blogger, who's widely read, that some idiot had just invented this on the internet, and everyone else had started saying, well, so-and-so saying this here, then so-and-so saying this there. But in America, I do find it more admirable, the openness. I mean, to go back to Patricia Scotland, who Tom mentioned, you know, the question that people of any kind of decent sympathies must be wondering is she employing an illegal immigrant because it's sort of semi-surf, exploited labour? Now, in the States, should it be up before a congressional committee? And she would, or Senate committee, and she would have to show how much she paid. Was she paying minimum wage? Was she paying sickness? Was she paying holidays? Was she treating her like a worker, or was she using her because she couldn't go to the police exploitatively? And that to me is far more interesting than whether Patricia Scotland has broken the law about this sort of vast undocumented servant class we've got in Britain.
Goes to the point about Vidura's appointment, that in America that kind of job would possibly be something that you'd have hearings
for. You'd have ratification hearings,
and
yes.
The whole thing is just sort of done more properly.
But the reality of the health smears is that it isn't about the health, it's about his leadership skill, and people are just looking for things to get at him. And ahead of this conference, it would almost be more dramatic if people thought Labour had a chance. There's a sense, really, of just giving up, a bit of fatalism.
Well, people going off
for new jobs. And I think the Shruti Vidura thing, the job she's doing, she may be suited to. It may be an important job. But if they really believed Labour was going to win the next election and be a triumphant power, reforming financial services from Downing Street, she wouldn't want to go.
I know you've probably gone over this a million times, but I'm still of the Charles Clark persuasion that it's one thing to lose an election, it's another to lose by a landslide. And is the British left really going to go to the people of this country next April or May and say, here's our offer, vote for us and you get five more years of Gordon Brown?
Indeed, and we have gone over it many times, and I hope our listeners are not bored of it, but I think that it won't happen at conference, but I think that Brown will face more challenges.
But I mean, what happens at conference is, of course, a matter of speculation, and whether our listeners
the Lib Dems have done this,
despairing at it or not, there's no doubt we're going to be coming back. Yeah, and the Lib Dems, however, have already shown us their showcase. Here's a recap.
I'm Michael White, and I've spent this week in Bournemouth with the Liberal Democrats for the first major party conference of the new political season. Clegg's performance.
If there's one policy you take away from this conference, one policy to mention on every doorstep, in every phone call, in every leaflet, let it be this one. We will deliver fair taxes.
Bit long-winded, some colleagues say, but good enough yesterday. Vince Cable, he's still their best bet. He is the most trusted politician in Britain, according to a recent poll, and you can see why.
Now, our economy has experienced a massive heart attack, the economic equivalent of a heart attack.
He clothes understandable economic language in the language of morality as well, and he does it well. Unfortunately, some of his figures a bit flaky on the cost of doing one thing and cutting another thing, and of course the colleagues got cross over his mansions tax, which he's been trying to peddle to them for years, and bounced them. They heard it on the radio first. Now, Nick Clegg said right at the start of the week, maybe we won't be able to abolish tuition fees like we've said we've done, as was done in Scotland due to Lib Dem influence in the coalition with Labour in 1999. We may have to postpone it. They did not like that at all. And people like Evan Harris and Steve Webb, two hardened troublemakers in the Lib Dem tent, said, well, you know, you may review it, but as far as we're concerned, we're going to do it. And while you're on the subject, we're not going to means test middle class benefits either. You undermine the political protection which universal benefits, if you take it away from the upper and middle classes, then you end up, as Beveridge himself once said, benefits for the poor are usually poor benefits. Party unity? Well, with an election coming, all parties are more or less united. But this one had a few rows. We like a few rows. After all, that's real life, isn't it? Clegg's their leader. It's his first election. Leaders have normally got two elections in them in the Liberal Democrat Party. He's hoping he can increase the number of MPs he's got. That's what this is all about.
One of the things I found most shocking this week was that to hear Lib Dem front benchers talk about the man who's the most cherished politician in the UK as someone that Clegg will have to sack after the next election, and they meant it. And I couldn't figure out whether they were kind of absolutely justified in being really irritated that he doesn't consult them, or whether this was, you know, party politics going mad by eating their own treasure.
But it's this sense of a party fighting back against two people, isn't it? I think is the thing I picked up, Julian. What do you think?
Well, it's partly a party being a club, and there's plenty of Lib Dems who really think they belong to sort of debating society and want to talk about things and want to vote on things and pass resolutions. And they don't really like the public part of politics too much. That's done through just putting out lots of literature, often contradictory literature, winning enough marginal seats in order to kind of get some money, get some MPs. And the fun part of being a Lib Dem is conference. The MPs, of course, want to hang on to their seats, and they're getting pretty anxious about it. And one of the things you felt at this conference was MPs beginning to look over their shoulder back to the constituents, thinking, why am I in Bournemouth at all? I could be campaigning this weekend. I could win four more votes, and that might be enough to keep my job. So the party is drifting off in different directions. And at the core of it all is Nick Clegg trying to say, I'm a radical liberal, I've got this amazing agenda, I've really sharpened up the focus of the party. He set that up before the conference and arrived, and he hadn't sharpened it up at all, really. It went all over the place.
I mean, he did, by any reasonable reckoning, Nick, didn't he? Kind of swerve all over the place this week. So child benefit was going to go, and then it wasn't. Top-up fees were going to be abolished, then they were not going to be abolished, then they were going to be abolished in the future, but not immediately. There was a millionaire tax, which got described as codswallop, we were told, by people in the shadow cabinet. I mean,
not shadow cabinet. The Liberal Democrats are not the official opposition.
They do call it the shadow cabinet on their website.
Oh,
yeah.
Delusions of grandeur.
But, I mean, what did you make of it? If the idea was to project some sort of message this side of the election,
it wasn't very good, no. On the other hand, Liberal Democrat conferences are always like this. I mean, they're always bun fights. And a side of me likes that. They hark back to the pre-mass television days when party conferences actually decided policy, when they're important, they weren't just rallies for sound bites. And Liberal Democrats have all survived that.
I'm pleased. Make it happen. Terrible phrase, but that was the sound of peace breaking out.
I was going to say Allegra. Yeah. Though, this one though was a bit little more shambolic than usual, and perhaps even I, with my great tolerance, would have to say it didn't do them a great deal of good.
Saying too much democracy in the party.
Well,
too much?
The problem was, I don't think Nick Clegg is a great politician, but he's not a bad politician. He'll look okay up against Gordon Brown at the next election. David Cameron will look a lot better, but he won't seem so bad. I have a lot of respect for Vince Cable. The problem was, intellectually with them, they didn't seem to follow through. They seem to be giving they seem to want to give the hard message to say, we're going to have a massive dropping of promises, a massive restructuring of tax and spend to cope with this, the worst debt since the Second World War, which is a perfectly reasonable thing for them to say. But then they say things like, well, we're going to have a sort of super property tax on homes worth more than £1 million. Not a bad idea. Mm. But we're not going to use that to pay off the national debt. We're going to give it to people earning, to raise the income tax threshold to £10,000. Now, that's pre-crash politics. Mm. That's saying we'll have a tax rise here and a tax cut there, rather than saying we'll have a tax rise here, and I'm very sorry. Yeah. That's just going to have to go to pay off the interest. So they weren't following through intellectually, I thought.
I agree with that. And I think the Lib Dems would like to say it was really a good, proper party conference with lots of votes and lots of decision-making, and the media just don't understand it. You just want unity. Well, we're a party of democracy. I'm afraid the problem is really just confusion and lack of preparation. There was some disagreement, but there wasn't too much disagreement. What there was just complete lack of clarity, lack of understanding. Mm. Nobody knew what the policies were, including the people in the parties. You go up to and ask an MP, you'd ask the shadow minister, they want to be shadow ministers, in the department responsible for the policy that was being discussed at that moment, and they didn't know what the policy was. And at that point, you just don't take it very seriously.
Because if Cable was the Tory shadow chancellor, and he'd made the speech he made a week before at Reform of stuff that was not Lib Dem party policy, people have piled into him.
Yes,
and it's sort of difficult for us to figure out whether, it's kind of this great god of economics, or whether you should say, okay, you want to play with the big boys, then we will write stories that show you don't agree.
Absolutely, because the message of the conference that they tried to get across was the Tories are inexperienced, all over the place, a bit shallow, and fake.
George Osborne was a chancellor on work experience. You don't want a chancellor on work.
Not fit to lace Vince,
I thought it was all right.
Vince Cable's dancing shoes, I think Nick Clegg said. And so if they put that up as their proposition, we're serious guys, and that lot aren't, then they will get taken to pieces if they're not serious, and they weren't serious. And that really was pretty disappointing.
Also, I'm not a member of the Vince Cable Preservation Society, but you've got the most popular politician in the country. And I did feel there's a bit of a tall poppy syndrome there, that Lib Dems in particular like to bring their leaders down to size. How dare you say you're better than me? We are from the Southport delegation and we've got a composite motion here that you must respond to. And Cable's reputation took quite a battering last week,
yeah,
I thought.
Good. But it wasn't just jealousy, it was being unable to do their job. The woman, Julia Goldsworthy, who has that portfolio, she did not know.
And that was wrong. But, on the other hand, was it right for Liberals to start attacking George Osborne by saying people in the city don't trust him? Mm. Well, that's the best thing I've heard about George Osborne in years. these people who've cracked the economy, wrecked the banking system, say we don't like George Osborne. It's not an effective way of doing it, and not one I think is going to resonate with the public.
Do you think any of it's going to have any consequence, though, Julian? Most of the public's got a quarter of an eye at most on the Lib Dem conference. Although it's their last chance before the election, they'll get themselves back in order, won't they?
It'll have a bit of internal effect, and that will matter. The party feels a bit less sure of what it's saying. Its leaders will be a bit less sure. That knocks its campaigning back. And they're at quite a delicate stage. They're trying to rechange their campaign staff. They're trying to come up with a new strategy. Now, none of this matters to the voters, except that if the Lib Dems are not quite as vigorous, firing at 75% of their strengths rather than 100%, that could really damage their campaign against the Tories. Second effect, it made the media less interested. The idea we were going to sort of set up a three-party battle at the election, well, probably wouldn't have happened. It's always going to be Gordon Brown versus David Cameron. But the Lib Dems had a chance to kind of look quite interesting, have people put them into stories. Mm. They just looked a bit flaky. You'll feel less guilty if you don't mention them in the story after this conference, and that will harm them too.
One thing I missed hugely at the conference was, if you think about the situation the country's in, we're in a recession, unemployment's rising, our men and women are taking a terrible battering in Afghanistan. MPs are held in lower than vermin, as Nye Bevan would said after the expenses scandal. You didn't get any sense of the Lib Dems being able to mobilise popular anger, feeling anger themselves. There's no sense this is an insurgent third party rising up against a rotten political system that has got the country into the most terrible state.
Well, that's true. I think what you find at this conference, more than a conference 10 years ago, is that Lib Dems are insiders now. A decade ago, very few MPs, very few councils, everybody was an outsider. They were fighting the government, fighting the force. Now everybody at that conference works for local councils. There are people working for MPs. Half of them are MPs. It wasn't a big turnout. And it's a very, very technocratic kind of party now. It is the party of the ultimate insider. And you get that sense that left and right doesn't really matter to them. There isn't some great cause that they're trying to challenge. They just want to run things well, and that doesn't make you angry.
Well, the problem this week probably was that the party high command just don't know what sort of party they are. John Harris was with us down at the conference, and he went out and about to find out where on the political spectrum, left or right, the Lib Dems place themselves.
Where would you place yourself in your politics?
Where would I place myself? Yeah. Just certainly to the left of Gordon Brown.
Okay.
I mean, I'm definitely not a communist, right. Or a Marxist, but I'm on the left.
On the left.
I am happily on the
That's
left.
That's interesting.
On the old left-right thing, tax the wealthy more.
And you're happy. And you're happy with the L word. You're on the left.
Yeah, I'm happy on the left, and I'm a libertarian. Double L squared.
So they think, Julian, in spite of your claim just there that left and right doesn't matter, most of them seem to think that they are on the left.
Lots of them don't like Tories. They've spent their lives fighting Tories. So they see themselves naturally on the left because of that. They see themselves as a party of social justice, and that's a traditional cause of the left. They're really sceptical of this Tory stuff. They're being quite needled by it. And you notice the more that the Liberals...
The Tories saying,
hug them close, we love you. If you're really a progressive Liberal, come and join us. And the more that the Lib Dems squeal, and Chris Huhne's been squealing like mad, the more the Tories do it. So every time the Lib Dems protest, the Tories issue another press release. And Lib Dems all get very wound up and respond to it, and the Tories issue another one. They've got them kind of quite unhappy about that. So they do see themselves as a party of the progressive left, social justice, freedom, fairness. But then they also see themselves as a party of a small state, or at least a devolved state. And that is a little different to some of the traditional left in Britain.
In terms of what we heard was, on Saturday we heard savage cuts, Tory language, except I don't think the Tories would use the word savage, but we had savage cuts, and then we also heard real terms pay freeze for public sector workers and so on, and even Cable was talking about that being a nominal freeze, which is basically a cut. And then you later get this mansion tax. Well, is that left, is that right? Because there's, you know, problems with, you know, pensioners who are living in £1 million properties. Can they afford it? But do you think
they can move?
Well, indeed. Okay,
you
fine.
You make £1 million on sale of a house.
Fine. I mean, is it fair to sort of almost have a table and say, right, okay, we add all these up and you've just about come out as left or right or liberal when you put that to Clegg, he would say they are all coherent.
It is terribly hard to define what it means to be left-wing at the moment in the modern world for lots of reasons. You could write a book about it. In fact, I have written a book about it. But there are lots of reasons for it. But one is that the if you like the radical liberals or the new liberals of the turn of the 20th century, behind Lloyd George, they've won most of what they wanted. You know, and victory is a very bad thing, because it then leaves you, what are we meant to do next? And with
What's left? With
Liberal Democrats, you get a party that is... I know all parties are coalitions, but the coalitions within the Liberal Democrats, the breadth of the coalition is extreme. You've got people who would be on, I suppose, what we call the left of the Labour Party. You've got Greens, you've got deep Greens, you've got classic liberals who believe in free markets and social liberalism. I have people, quite serious people there telling me, because, you know, we hope we never get PR, because the first party to fall apart will be Liberal Democrats. In some ways it's very appealing with the Liberal Democrats, particularly their activists. It's more with them you get a kind of rather good English radical bloody-mindedness. Now, if you've got an unpopular cause, the best place to go is a Liberal Democrat conference, and you will get a hearing. But now, this notion that is being kicked about, that Liberal Democrats should now try to outflank Labour on the left, there are all kinds of problems with it. One, what does that mean? Two, how on earth are they going to make that sell in their southern seats?
I think they should give up on them.
On what?
On their southern seats.
Well, give them all that.
The electorate may choice for them.
The electorate probably are, but they've but got, they've so got 30 seats in the south, but there are 52 in the north, where they're second
to Labour. But when you're the people at the top of the party...
Hold on a second, After Lib Dems' top 20 targets, only six are held by Labour and three of those are three-way marginals. In other words, the Tories could just as easily take them as Lib Dems. It will take Liberals, yeah, a couple of elections to replace Labour as the main left-wing party, assuming they ever could.
But you don't think they should, do you, Julian?
Well, I think there's a difficulty putting forward a small state agenda and then saying we want to replace Labour, because there's a big and legitimate part of the British population that likes to vote for a quite a decent, strong state that runs things, taxes people and judges policies and fairness for people, doesn't try and just hand it all out to communities and let everything rip. And if the Lib Dems don't want to be that fairly social democratic centralised state party, which they don't seem to, they can't replace Labour. And so I think the difficulty is more a lack of leadership. I think this needs to come from the top. What does the party feel like?
There is a huge disconnect, incidentally, between, as far as we know from the polling evidence, the Liberal Democrat activists, and I guess most of their MPs, and the voters. People who say they're voting Lib Dem are now saying, if you like, their second preference is David Cameron.
Yes.
Whereas in 1997, they'd be saying their second preference is Tony Blair. So if you ask...
And more than that, a quarter of the people who voted Lib Dem at the last election told our ICM poll this week that they're going to vote Tory now.
Yeah. Lib Dems may be a left-of-centre party in Westminster, but the idea they can just order all their voters to immediately, you know, something say, right, turn left, off you go that way, don't stop until you hit the wall. I mean, it's not going to happen. They'll just lose votes to the Tories.
Cephalogically, that makes complete sense, and yet... What you were saying just before we heard the clip about the lack of anger, you know, there's a lot of people who are sick to death of Labour and Tories at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
And people are fed up with the economic system and with the political system. Mm. And isn't there a space for a kind of, whether or not we use the words left and right, but a very radical and anti-establishment place, which would have been called left in the past, to take both those on, and shouldn't the Lib Dems be doing it?
I mean,
it?
This is my bugbear, but it is a pity if you're talking about left-wing traditions in Britain. The one that's got completely lost is the tradition for, not workers' control, but for, you know, workers on boards to control managers' pay, as we have in Germany, of more democratic participation in public services. Now that, you know, in some ways is a more...
It's really fertile.
It's a tradition which is closer to Liberal Democrats than is to Labour.
Doesn't
play very
in Somerset,
status.
Though, does it? Well, so that's their problem.
Well, you know, you could go to people in Somerset and you say, you've got this hospital. Hmm. You have no say over it. Your MP has no say over it. Your councillors have no say over it. It's all run from Whitehall. Mm. Doctors in the hospital can be told what to do by managers.
Everything you said is what the Conservatives are saying, though. So.
Well, yeah, well, maybe the Conservatives are picking it up. They're not saying it's about industry, mind you. They're not saying it's about private industry. You know, the democratic traditions in Britain, expanding it beyond Westminster. I mean, Labour are hopeless at it, and they are still the centralised state party. But I would have thought they haven't done it, so I'm not blaming you. I'm not saying you've got to agree with me, otherwise you're an awful party. But that whole way of thinking on the British left, they've missed that, and they don't seem very interested.
Well, just to bring things down a little from the lofty traditions of syndo-anarchalism or whatever it is, if you want to see John Harris's film where he exposes unwitting Liberal Democrats to his homemade ideology swingometer, then you can see that on guardian.co.uk/politics.
In the meantime, I'm off to mainline orange juice, and I think we're all of us going down to Brighton for Labour conference, except you say you're not, Nick.
I've got a book to write.
Politics Weekly was produced by Francesca Panetta, and until next week, goodbye.